Hello, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat number
244,
and I have good news. Otto's here. Now, Otto wasn't here last Fireside Chat because he was in surgery on his leg, and I think he's doing pretty well. I'm shocked that he's here for the Fireside Chat, actually. He is currently, what we did to cajole him into the Fireside Chat bed is, as you could see, he's busy. It's doggy ice cream. And I asked what the difference between doggy ice cream and human ice cream is. I learned that it has less sugar, to which my natural reaction was, sounds good to me. And then we had a discussion on whether I should try it out. Anyway, welcome everybody. Light moments are critical to a healthy life. Because there's certainly a lot of tension. Nearly all of it is gratuitous. That's the amazing thing. But that's another subject for another time. So the latest is, of course, the Roe v. Wade, or the removal of Roe v. Wade ruling in the latest Supreme Court decision. I talked to you about abortion a few weeks ago, just on the morality of the issue, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it now. I also want to devote a lot of time to your questions and to reminding you that the 4th of July is coming up. A lot I want to say to you. But in a nutshell, I got to tell you what is the issue for me that is disturbing. I'm not disturbed that there are people who are pro-choice. I am disturbed that they are not at all troubled morally by abortions that have nothing to do with health. That's troubling. I am okay with differing with people on various issues. No one has a monopoly on truth and morality. But when people I differ with don't even acknowledge that there is a moral problem in their position, that there might be moral ambiguity at all, that, frankly, is scary. The notion that there is no side, none, no possible validity to the notion that a viable baby or fetus or unborn, whatever term you wish to use, has any right to living, may be killed for no reason other than the mother wishes it dead, that there is no moral problem with that, that's disturbing. That's scary, actually. Because that means that these people are so deeply unsophisticated in their thinking, non-rational, has nothing to forget God. An atheist should be morally troubled. And this has nothing to do, and I'm very God-centered, but this has nothing to do with God. Nothing to do with religion. You are not troubled by killing a perfectly viable baby that geographically happens to be located inside a person, that it's a non-issue. The entire world of pro-choice acts like it is a non-issue. There are many pro-life people who acknowledge that there is an issue. Even they may come down against abortion even then, but they acknowledge there's an issue if there's a rape, if there's incest. At least there is, among many of the pro-life people I know, there is an acknowledgement of circumstances under which one could understand the other side. Not agree, but at least understand. But there's zero understanding. It's as if the pro-life position is ipso facto absurd. That's what's scary. If the child is viable outside of the womb, Why isn't it a child? Is he leaving? Well, at least he was here. You got a chance. Bye-bye, Otto. Look, he's walking on his own. I can't believe it because he can't walk up the steps in the house. This is what I find. It's very disconcerting about what's called the progressives or the left. On almost every issue, it doesn't seem like the moral matters. A guy says he's a girl and he can therefore cheat, which is what he's doing, or she's doing, I don't care if you call he or she, in competing in women's sports. That's cheating. But it's just for people on the left, it's just transphobia. Really, it's transphobia. It's not there's no moral, even eensy teensy beensy, a bit of moral truth to the idea that it's unfair to the biological women in women's sports. That is why I am scared of very little in life, but the left is scary. Because the moral compass is not just broken, it doesn't function. If somebody was pro-choice said, look, this is a tough issue. The child is viable. Her health is not in jeopardy. She obviously, in the vast majority of cases, she got pregnant of her own will. I acknowledge that there's an issue here. But I still think a woman should have the right to terminate her own pregnancy, even though I acknowledge that there is a moral problem with killing a viable child. So that's really what I most wanted to say about this. The incapacity to see any moral ambiguity on the part of the left on this or for that matter, any issue. Okay, that's the thought on that one. Let's see your questions and take it away.
Hey, Dennis, I am Tyler, 26 years old from Chicagoland. Question for you. When reading the book of Job and Deuteronomy, you know, Job's story is about a righteous person experiencing misfortune, and Deuteronomy is filled with Moses' warnings about punishment given for acting sinfully. And I'm curious how one would determine between misfortune on righteous people and punishment for acting sinfully. So we'd love your thoughts on this.
Okay. So for those of you not theologically inclined or used to such questions, how do you know if a person who is suffering because of punishment for bad things they've done, or because of misfortune, they have not done bad things and they're just suffering, if you will, unfairly. In this world, it is very rare that people suffer as punishment for their bad deeds. Now, here's an interesting little sidebar to that. Really bad deeds very rarely get punished in this world. Little bad deeds do. not by God, just by life. You know what really gets punished? This is a subject for another time. Foolish decisions get the most punished. Where people did not intend to do something bad, but did because they were foolish. That is very common in life. You made a foolish decision about a job, about a spouse, about God knows anything really in life, and you paid the price for it. I'll give you a silly one that just comes to mind. It's completely silly, but it will illustrate the point. You are going on a trip and you have luggage with a broken zipper, and you figure, what the hell? I'll tie it with a rope or something, and it doesn't work. The zipper unlocks, some clothes fall out on the trip. So you're punished for a foolish decision. You should have gotten either a new zipper or new luggage. All right? Okay, so it was a foolish decision. It wasn't an evil act. It was a foolish act. Evil is rarely punished. The bad, even if they're punished, it's often not commensurate with the bad that they have done. So a second point and the bottom line vis-a-vis your question is, it is not for us to ever say, if someone is suffering, oh, they must have done something really bad, that's why they're suffering. That's a very, very dangerous and often immoral thing to conclude. In that regard, with a lot of respect, and I mean this sincerely, for Eastern religious thought, it's one of the reasons I've never bought karma. The doctrine that if you're suffering in this life, even if you're a baby with a horrible disease, it's because of bad things you did in the previous life. What it does is it doesn't engender sympathy for the suffering. Oh, you deserve it. You brought it on yourself. You were such a terrible person in the previous life. It's a very tempting doctrine because people are very, very troubled, and they should be, by the existence of unjust suffering. A baby that is in pain, chronic pain, born with some terrible defect, is a very troubling thing for everybody. And so people have wanted to come up with answers. I acknowledge I don't have an answer. And that has satisfied me. I believe that there is a God who does have an answer. It is not available to me in this world. And my task is to minimize unjust suffering. I know my task. I don't know the answer. That's a very important distinction. My attitude toward unjust suffering is try to minimize it, not explain it. Okay. Here we go. Alex, 65 years old, Northridge, California. Hello, Dennis. I would like to know your thoughts about lack of patriotism in America. Living in California, I see more hate than love for America. Be happy and healthy. Thank you. I am happy and healthy, and I thank you. That's right. It's a perfect question in light of the 4th of July coming up. So I want to do an opening monologue on this. I was it's fascinating because I was thinking about it in the car coming back here. The left has destroyed all meaningful identities. So I'll give you three that have animated my life. I have I have three very primary, very fulfilling identities in no order. Just I'll tell you the three. American, Jew, male. And the left wants us to get rid of our national identity, our religious identity, and our sexual identity. This is not binary, right? Not binary. They hate national identity. They think it is a cause of evil. They hate religious identity. They think religion is nonsense at best and bad at worst. And the idea that there is a binary sexual identity to human beings, you know, binary means it's just you're either male or female. They completely reject that. You can be in the middle. You can say that you are both. You can say that you want to go to the other. You can, at schools today, it is your mood. Some days you may feel male, some days female. This is a tragedy for young people. They have been robbed of meaningful identity. They're left with race, which is a non-meaningful identity. That's the irony. The meaningful ones, did you notice I didn't mention white? Because I don't give a damn if I'm white. I don't give a damn if you're white. I don't give a damn if you're black or red or whatever color, brown. It doesn't mean anything. Religion, national, and sexual, they're meaningful. They have meaning to them. So you live in California as I do, and I have lamented this all of my broadcast career, which is a month away from 40 years. The absence of American flags on July 4th in front of homes, or on any national holiday for that matter. Kids are taught, have been taught now for some years, if they're American, your past stinks, your present is in a racist, systemically racist country, and your future is death because of global warming, climate change. What has been done to children is so wrong, my heart breaks, actually. It is a very fulfilling thing to have an identity that transcends yourself. So, yes, the lack of patriotism is quite something. I ask, can it come back? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. Can a generation that has been raised to believe America is a pretty rotten place and that people who love the flag are basically some form of fascist, can they be taught to love a flag, let alone perhaps risk their life for it? I don't know. I do know that it's not a happy life bereft of these identities. I was asked once at a speech very, very early on in my career, a group of Israeli Americans living in California, living in Los Angeles, where there are many of them, they asked me if I would come to their group and give a talk or actually be interviewed. And I thought, yeah. But I made a condition, and that was that they interview me in Hebrew, because I love practicing my languages. They said, you could speak Hebrew. So then I spoke Hebrew to the guy for a minute. He said, okay, we'll interview you in Hebrew. And his first question was fascinating. Are you first an American or first a Jew? And I think best under pressure. And I came up with an answer I have used since then and made up at that moment. I said, well, I have two fathers, Abraham and George Washington. And that guy thought that was a fascinating response. It was a completely honest response. And I am so rich for having those two fathers. Kids today don't have any. Anyway, the question is, by the way, is an interesting one. You ask Christian, are you first a Christian or an American? And I think most will say, I'm both. And that, but of course, I get my religious values from my Christianity. Obviously, I get, if you're a Christian, my salvation from Christianity. It's a perfectly legitimate question. But the fact that the question is asked, is a function of the fact that people understand you have those two identities. The fact that they're asking which is more important is secondary to the fact that they recognize, like that guy asking me, he knew, oh, you're really a strong Jew and a strong American. That's lucky on my part that I got those two strong identities. Kids today don't have either. I now gave the monologue that I would be giving if we actually opened up a show with that. So that you can drop that.
Yeah.
Okay, next. Eli or Ellie. My Eli could be either. 18 years old, Gulf Shores, Alabama. What would you say is America's national doctrine? For context, anti-communism was listed as West Germany's national doctrine. Curious to hear what your opinion is on America's national doctrine. I remember West Germany. I don't remember that it was natural. Its national doctrine was anti-communism. If it was, that was not a bad one. Anti-communism is a very moral thing to have advocated for and defined a moral mission of a society. Remember, half of Germany was communist, East Germany, or the DDR, Deutsche Demokratische Republik, German Democratic Republic, as it was called. Whenever, by the way, just as a fact, whenever a country has democratic in its name, you know it's not a democracy. Right? It's like the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. If you have peoples, it means it's a totalitarian state. If you have democratic, it's a totalitarian state. It's very interesting. America's national doctrine is the American, what I call the American Trinity. Term I came up with years ago in outside of my Bible commentary, arguably my most important book. Think a second time. That's a great one. But the most important book, I think, is still The Best Hope, which is three books in one about Americanism, leftism, and Islamism. If I were outside of the Bible commentary, if I could have you read one, I'd have you. That's the book that made this young woman that I do a podcast with, Dennis and Julie, which you should take a look at. That's what converted her to conservatism while she was at Harvard in these last years. Still the best hope. It explains the left and America really, really, really well. And that is where I coined the term, the American Trinity, and that I got from the coins of America. On every coin is In God We Trust, E Pluribus Unum, Liberty. That's the American doctrine. Or if you will, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness from the Declaration of Independence. It's not taught to anybody, and it's one of the reasons we don't have kids identifying with America. Zachary, 18, La Porte, Texas. Hi, Mr. Prager. My name is Zach, and I am from Houston, Texas. I am a Christian, and I was wondering if you had any advice for young adults who are unsure what to do with their life. Thank you, and I love your fireside chats. God bless. God bless you. So what was that now? Advice for young adults who are unsure what to do with their life. Well, here, to begin with, let me just tell you, it is completely normal at 18 not to know what you want to do with your life. All right? Just so you will know. Almost nobody at 18 knows what they want to do with their life. So don't worry about that. I can't use my life as an example. My older son told me this when in his 20s. He said, Dad, you were unbelievably lucky. You knew at 15 what you wanted to do with your life. And he was right. I wrote it in my diary. To influence people to the good. Those were the words I used. I have been motivated in one direction since my early or mid-teens. I'm very abnormal in that way, and I fully recognize that. I don't think, as much as I said it is totally normal not to know, 50 or 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, I don't think 18-year-olds were as plagued by this question as they are today. This is a new question. What am I going to do with my life is a new question. So as normal as it is, which is how I began my answer, it happens to be new, relatively speaking, in human history. People knew exactly what they wanted to do with their life. They wanted to get married. They wanted to make a family. They wanted to be part of a community. They wanted to make a living. And that was really fulfilling stuff. But everything that I just mentioned, except make a living, earn a living, it has been debunked, has been derided. I've often said, if a girl got up in a college class, the issue were raised, what's the most important thing for you in your future? And some girl got up, 20-year-old young woman gets up in class. Well, frankly, as much as I want to pursue a career, by far the most important thing in my life is to find a good man and marry him and make a family. To say that today on almost any college campus, or certainly in a high school classroom, is to risk universal mockery. Whereas had you said that 100 years ago, 200, 400, 700, 900 years ago, people would have yawned. Of course, makes perfect sense. You want to find a good man to marry. You're a man, you want to find a good woman to marry. Yes, I'm well aware that for gay people, that is not necessarily an option, or indeed not an option at all. I'm not talking about the 3% of society that is gay. And I hope that they do find a partner for their life. It's not good to be alone, whether you're gay or straight. However, for the vast majority of people, it is ideal to find a member of the opposite sex and to marry and to make a family if possible. It's fascinating, the very fact of so many people your age asking me that question shows that that is not in their minds. That's a pretty damn fulfilling thing to do with your life. Find a person to marry and make a family. Added to that, try to support a family, and that's pretty fulfilling. Add to that, hopefully, a religious conviction, so you have a religious community and religious meaning in your life. I think that's pretty fulfilling in a life. So otherwise, what does the question even mean? Again, I know that it's normal to ask it, but what does it really mean? Aside from marriage, children, community, religion, making a living, what's left? What does it mean then what to do with one's life? Discover a cure for cancer? That would be awesome if you did. But most people won't. So it's fascinating that it's a question, because the traditional answers to that question have been clobbered. They're not viable anymore. So I think that's a pretty good list. Get married, make a family, have a religion, make a living. Add some hobbies to that. I think that's a pretty rich life. I know your look. It's the 30-minute look, correct?
Yeah.
Good stuff today. Mm-hmm. Important stuff. If you're an American, I know a lot of you watch from other countries, and I'm delighted with that fact. But to all Americans, a happy 4th, a meaningful 4th. It is more important than ever that it be celebrated. So put out a flag and wish people a happy 4th. And I'll see you all next week. Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.